Hi, I'm Nigel Baker, and you're listening to The Future Financial Advisor. We're running this podcast to create an avenue for advisors to share their thoughts and their best interests and really trying to attract those advisors who want to take the industry forward. What we want is great businesses are really making a difference and really making a big impact to their clients, and we want to know how they're doing it. So in this series, we're going to be discussing the latest digital platforms, some best practices, evidence-based investing strategies. We want to give financial advisors the tools they need to help more investors improve their financial well-being. So if you're ready to take the industry forward, modernize your advisory practice and reach a new generation of investors and the new generation of advisors, then this show is for you.
Hi, and welcome to today's edition of our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we're going to talk about really the year ahead and a bit of a reflection of what's been going on in the world and what that means for the year ahead for Australian investors and retirees and anyone involved in the markets. Because as always, when the year starts, there's lots of forecasts and lots of things being said, and it can create a bit of uncertainty. So can we, decipher that, take away some of the noise and bring it back down to what's important and what we perhaps can control and try to disregard what we can't control. So over the break, I visited Western New South Wales and the Flinders Ranges in South Australia, and it really made me appreciate the sheer size of this wide brown land to see firsthand its beauty and its terror. There's so much to love about this sunburnt country. But despite the anxiety caused by COVID and the uncertainty perhaps about the year ahead, I remain really positive about the future. There is so much beauty around us, and there's lots of terror with the Omicron version of COVID sweeping through our plains. However, this land that Dorothea McKellar so eloquently wrote about, or was first published her poem in 1908, is really not too different today. When you go out west, you see these plains that have been through droughts and rains and war and peace and diseases and all these troubles that Australians have managed to be quite resilient to, and we've forged such a unique and prosperous country. We are really fortunate to call this place home. It's staggering to see the war memorials in every tiny little country town and the names of those fallen from the great wars. You know, the loss, the pain, and the time it took these towns and farms to recover through the Depression, after the First World War, and then they had the Second World War. It's really hard to imagine the toughness and the severity of it all. So there's no doubt that, you know, COVID is not easy, and I'm not dismissing it at all. It's challenging for us all in very different ways, but history does show there's a way forward. The reality really kicked in about this new strain of COVID as we drove back through the vast plains of southwestern New South Wales, and if you've been down there, it's hundreds of kilometres of just flat land. It's quite amazing to see, even though it sounds not that interesting, but it actually really is quite fascinating. And news came in of, you know, more and more cases, and this time around it was from friends and family and people we knew. While in 2021, you know, the virus seemed a little bit at bay. It was quite rare to know someone in your immediate circle, and it was getting closer and closer. But now, every day I'm hearing someone I know personally, staff, colleagues, good friends, family, fortunately they're all coming through, fully recovered. And for a lot of clients also who've had it, and some have had it quite badly. So we do hope that you all survive this and get through it and stay well. You got to take care. And if you do become ill or you're isolated from family or friends or for any reason need assistance, we're here to help. Generally here to help if we can. And if you're thinking about travel and can't go too far, well, if you get the chance to go west and see some of this wide brown land and escape the crowds, it's waiting for you. So as we enter the new year, we are again holding our breath as the pandemic takes hold and disrupts our lives. What does this mean for the year ahead? Are there lights of hope for this willful, lavish land? What's in store for 2022? What should we look out for that may affect investments, taxes, and superannuation? So on the economic front, as we know, market returns have been really positive. You know, if you look at your statements of investments and super accounts, these returns have been buoyed by low interest rates, government stimulus, and business spending. And a year ago, this certainly was not forecasted. If we wind back the clock to this time last year, not many predicted large returns from global markets and property markets as well. I suppose when we start the year then, trying to forecast or even believing any forecasts is not a sensible approach. There's lots of numbers out in the marketplace and in the media, and you've really got to be careful because time tells us that it's very difficult to accurately forecast what's going to happen. What may help this year is that global growth measured by gross domestic product is actually expected to have grown by nearly 6% in comparison to 2020 slump of -3%. So that's a positive. In Australia, that GDP number is expected to be around 5.5% despite the setback in the September quarter, and now we're seeing some challenges challenges with Omicron in the supply chain. So let's see what happens, but it will be interesting. Now, a lot of these numbers we're sourcing from places like Thomson, Reuters, Morningstar, and the Real Estate Institute of Australia, so acknowledging those sources. So the big issues for 2022, I don't think these will be catastrophic, but they're going to create media headlines and nervousness, no doubt, for all investors. One of the biggest issues, I believe, is how the US manages the transition from this low interest rate environment to a potentially higher interest rate environment. Inflation in the US is now at 39-year highs. So can President Biden manage this? His support is dropping. If you're reading any of the US media, it's not looking too good for Biden over there. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has now indicated rates will rise. A dubious sort of comment. It's actually a positive comment saying they are going to increase rates. Maybe that's not such a bad thing. The world of low interest rates continuing, I actually believe, is a bigger risk. We can't live in this sort of zero rate world forever. Far better for world economies to really run on what may be seen as normal rates. But the big issue for the US and the world is this transition back to normal and what impact that has on economies. So in the US, they've got midterm elections in November. Obviously, they've got a set four-year term, November being their election date. It's likely that the Republican candidate to run against Biden is none other than Donald Trump. So he has the Republican support at this stage. And this could potentially be divisive again for the US. You know, there's been a lot of instability there when Trump lost the election and in the last period with COVID. So the US, if it's wobbly, then that will flow on to other world markets. Americans are always optimistic if you read their press, and most Americans you meet are very upbeat always about America, and that's great. But I fear that this could create instability if it's not managed well, and therefore that'll flow through. Having said all that, despite the unique political landscape and the upheavals they've had, their economy has been very robust. And of course, the China situation will continue to make headlines. You know, where is China heading? It's not going away. There is a geopolitical risk there, depending on how China plays it. And their economy will be really important because they don't want to risk, you know, a lot of people there that they need to manage. A lot of people have come through and now have some wealth through. It's going to be a delicate time how China manages that external view they've got, but also their internal situation. You know, how far will they go to exert their influence over the world? We've seen some of that in Australia, and Australia pushed back in the last year or so. And this, again, will affect markets if trade tensions continue and affect Australia's ability to trade. So we've shown great resilience. The Australian economy has again been very positive. Our trade numbers have been very strong despite the trade, I suppose, boycotts from China. And we've aligned with some old friends like the UK, and other markets have opened up. But can that be sustained? You know, China is a massive economy and we all need to work together. I'm all for foreign investment. I'm not against that. But I must admit, some of the material I have read makes me worried about Australia's future. And we do need to think about that for future generations. There's a book called The Silent Invasion by Clive Hamilton. That's a really good start to getting informed. If like me, you thought some of these cryouts were a little bit exaggerated, and start reading into it and get some independent views. It's a little bit frightening, but it's something that thankfully you can see Australia starting to make some changes. Big impact this year is inflation. It's going to flow through. We are going to see prices rise. We're already seeing that in the supermarkets here in Australia. And again, it might be better for rates to go up. It's just the issue of how that happens and how global central banks manage that process. Another big issue this year will be housing prices. We've seen everyone who's got property are loving it, but people trying to get into the market, it's been a massive challenge as prices just shot up in the last year. And you know, really, can the market continue at that rate? It appears not. A few years ago, not many predicted such a surge in prices. The big concern really is while interest rates are low, and they might be going from, you know, a low to still a relatively low, that increase in repayments could see people suddenly having to repay payments increasing by 50%, even though the actual interest rate doesn't look like it's going up that much as those variable rates change. So that could have a huge impact on the economy and people's ability to. If those mortgage rates go up, then they're going to have to fork other expenditure. And of course, COVID is going to continue to cause uncertainty. You know, how many variants are there yet to come? Will the vaccines be effective? Are we reaching a stage where this is a permanent flu season? Or is it much worse? The bad news is that there are 24 letters in the Greek alphabet, so let's hope we don't have to get through them all. But we'll see how that pans out. There's some optimism that this will evolve into more of a regular type flu, but we just don't know. We don't know if the next variants work better or worse. With rates, the Reserve Bank doesn't make advance calls on rates. So, you know, markets are factoring a rate rise in Australia. It's still going to be relatively low from a historic point of view. But as mentioned above, the actual increase in repayments resulting from such an increase is what will be very significant. And this impact on share prices, really what happens with markets from a very simple point of view is that there's a discount factor used to value cash flow. So a lot of these high tech firms have got the discount factor is almost zero. So, you know, that's creating these valuations, which are sort of justified by the mathematics of it all. But as soon as interest rates increase, then that discount factor changes, obviously, and the valuations therefore have to come down. It's just simple mathematics. So that will have an impact on markets. Now, we talked about US politics, but there's also going to be a federal election in Australia. Could be in March, as early as March. It's unlikely, perhaps. What seems more likely is that Prime Minister Morrison will meet with the Governor General after the federal budget, which is going to be in April this year, which would most likely result in an election in May. Now, when we talk about forecasting markets, well, politics is even tougher, and it's only a two-horse race. But as we saw in the last election here, polls showed that Morrison had no chance of winning coalition, but they won on the day. They won 77 seats to 68. So it was actually not an easy win, but it wasn't, considering the polls were saying that they were going to be swept out of power. So the pollsters and all the polling firms have now changed their methodology and believe they'll be more accurate. And of course, it's looking close again. And it's probably going to come down to some key things, and probably some key seats that where there's some strong independents pushing for power. However, most of those seats are probably coalition seats that might potentially go to independents. And those independents are sort of their only main change is really they're running a bit more of an aggressive climate change policy. So we'll see what happens there. But those independents did win. Would they still align with the coalition? So their electorate is more coalition than Labor, perhaps, or will they cross over? That will be huge. Because the big issue for Labor and Mr. Albanese is that Labor has been struggling to gain over 33% of the primary vote for quite some time now. And they've lost connection with that traditional working class. How they appeal to this mixed voter base is really challenging for them and what their message needs to be. They'd probably love to be a bit more aggressive on some policies such as energy and climate, but that would upset some of their traditional working class seats where there's more miners, for example, who would lose their jobs if Labor had a really aggressive climate policy. And then they have to go to those inner city seats where they're very popular, but those inner city seats are more pro climate change. So it's quite a difficult task they've got. If they're going to win, they need a large swing against an incumbent government, which is never that easy. And normally to do that requires massive disharmony. So COVID could provide this opportunity, and there needs to be change or there's some significant or different new policies. But as we've seen, when Shorten tried all the super tax changes and capital gains tax changes and removing franking credits, if we wind back the clock even further, when Houston from the coalition side tried to bring in the GST in the 90s, well, as we're bringing those into a campaign is very difficult and they had dismal outcomes. So I'm really interested to see how Mr. Albanese and the Labor Party play this game. You know, will they go softly, softly or be aggressive? I can't see them announcing radical tax reform or risking too many marginal seats via a more aggressive climate policy. So while the vaccination rollout was a blunder and the current COVID blowout would be difficult to explain to voters, is that enough ammunition for Mr. Albanese to walk in? Will that be enough to swing the votes? It's really hard to tell and it's going to be very close. However, from a market point of view, both parties really, they're quite similar in policy, really, taking away the climate change. They're different there, but it's not really that different when we look at the detail. So can Mr. Albanese win the hearts and minds like Kevin Rudd did? Perhaps to when he asked John Howard with Kevin 07 and a real PR campaign. I can't see Albanese running that sort of campaign. So it's going to be fascinating, and it could come down to how well or poorly, really, Mr. Morrison, Prime Minister Morrison, handles COVID and potentially other variants if they come out before the election. From the coalition point of view, they're just going to be hoping that the economic recovery gets them through and inflation doesn't poke its head out until maybe June or so after the election. But having said all that, I don't think either outcome, whether Labor get in or coalitions stay in, will affect our local markets too much in the short term. Larger global factors really have a bigger impact. And one thing that should be safe is franking credits. Now, whoever wins is going to have a tough term ahead of them. So it's not an easy job ahead, as we've talked about rolling economies out of low interest rates. Been lots of money being thrown at the economy the last few years, and so a huge amount of debt. And this next term, they've really got to stop the handouts, unfortunately. They just can't keep handing out money. There's $3 trillion in super. So one thing that's going to happen is can't see super being left untouched. The GST has proven so difficult to change, and particularly the climate of our states and how they've all not got on in the COVID time. So GST requires the states to support all that. So can't see how the next government cannot make changes to the tax system to try and repay this debt. So that's going to be a challenge. Now, I hope this doesn't sound all doom and gloom. There is some good news, I think. There's some good reason for optimism about continuing economic recovery. The virus is a big factor, but we don't know, of course, and there's some suggestions that after Omicron, we'll be more immune, and this will become more like a normal flu. So we're all well and truly over this COVID thing, so let's hope so, and let's hope we can sort of move forward and it becomes less a risk to our health and safety, and the world can really, truly open up. Savings, there's excess savings of around $2.3 trillion. That's a ridiculous amount of money, and $250 billion here in Australia. So that's going to create an ongoing boost to spending. We've seen that over the last year or so. Interest rates, as I've said, I don't think that's such a negative. I think as we see rates go up for retirees, well, that's better. Their income will increase from cash and bonds. And new home buyers finally might see some light at the end of a tunnel. I think economies do work a bit better with rates at sort of normal rates. You can't have rates at zero. It creates some inequalities. Inventories, we're seeing some supply chain shortages now, but that actually leads to some pent-up demand. So that actually gives the economy is a bit of a boost. There's also a factor called the wealth effect. Australia talked about it's a relatively lucky nation when we compare ourselves to the rest of the world. We can get a bit beat up by the media here. With the rise in asset prices the last few years, many Australians have now become millionaires simply by buying and holding their own home. And with the growth of their super, people feel good, and that provides a bit of comfort and spending. Of course, this only persists if jobs remain plentiful and stable, and job and wage growth kicks in, but that wealth effect does help the economy. And business sentiment. So despite the ongoing COVID issues, business spending and surveys have actually remained fairly optimistic, and it's creating good signs for the economic growth in Australia. So as we said earlier, the recovery from the lockdowns has been supported by excess savings, strong business investment and high confidence levels, which suggests growth of around 5.5%. And that's according to economist Shane Oliver from AMP Capital. And he's a very well-regarded economist, and those numbers are fairly close to other economic indicators and other economists' numbers. So, you know, that's a good number. This will certainly support profit growth. 5.5% is quite a strong growth number. So again, what happens for investors? So Australian shares, as we know, provide attractive yield to cash, and other growth markets have always outperformed cash over time. And we know that cash has no inflation hedge, and we need to be aware of the downside risk as global markets transition, of course. So as people move money from cash to other assets, they can't expect to get 20-30% again this year. So really, if you think about it, some cash and bonds, you know, it's tough because the rates are low. You have to have some money there, particularly for retirees. So if you're thinking about a significant change in your asset allocation, it really should be well considered. Don't chase last year's returns. It needs to be part of a long-term plan and stick to the fundamentals. I don't believe there's any need for short-term radical changes. All right, so thanks for listening in so far. Here's a quick summary of what we've been talking about today. The main things to keep an eye on in 2022 are as follows. Coronavirus, new variants could set back the economy and the recovery. But keep an eye on these GDP numbers. It again may be surprising how economies manage through this. Inflation, US figures are really high and global figures are heading north. This may not be so bad as interest rates return to some normal levels. Let's watch this space. US politics, as we mentioned, Biden's losing support. He may lose control of Congress in the midterm elections in November. So it's really the ability of the US to handle this and handle the recovery. It's going to be critical to global markets, and that prospect of a Trump versus Biden campaign will be interesting to watch. And at home here, our Australian election. Again, I don't think the outcome either way will make a huge difference in the markets, but it's always interesting times. We'll see if the election is called in March or May. So I hope that's been really helpful. If you like it, provide some comments and subscribe. If you have any questions, please reach out to us, send us a note. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening in.
You've been listening to The Future Financial Advisor. So if you've been enjoying the show, please make sure to share it with your network and leave a review on your favourite listening platform. Or if you've got some ideas or thoughts or would like to come on as a guest or know someone who would be a great guest, then please let me know. To learn more about Scientium, just go to our website, scientium.com.au, or look me up on LinkedIn. Look forward to speaking with you and see you on the next episode.